Okay, we're going to begin here on the Mishnah in the middle of Chof Dal Amud Bet. The Mishnah begins, Ein madlikim b'shemen sreifa b'yom tov. May not light with shemen sreifa on yom tov. We already discussed from the first Mishnah that shemen sreifa is shemen shel truma, that is tmei'ah, and needs to be nisrefet. Over here, the Mishnah is discussing yom tov, whereas in the previous Mishnah we discussed Shabbat. That's what the Gemara tried to reconcile, why there's a difference between Shabbat and yom tov. Are we really talking about two different items? Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Ein Madlikin B'Itran, Mibnei Kvod HaShabbat. One may not light with Itran because of Kvod HaShabbat. Itran, we already discussed in the Gemara about the definition of Itran, which was Psuta DeZifta, which was the dregs or the leftover of the pitch that we saw on the bottom of Chof Amud Bet, the discussion of what Psuta DeZifta was. Chamim Matarim B'Chol HaShmanim. Rim say that all Shmanim are okay. B'shemen shumshumin, b'shemen eguzim, b'shemen snonot, b'shemen dagim, b'shemen pakuot, b'itran ubenift. So this is a continuation of the statement of the Chachamim that all shmanim are good, and including shemen shumshumim, sesame seed oil, shemen eguzim, oil from nuts, shemen snonot from radishes, b'shemen dagim. Over here there is a disagreement between Rashi and the Tosafot. Shemen dagim, Rashi says, mikirvei dagim shinimochu. It's from the innards of a fish that has dissolved, which is the same definition that Rashi brought before when we discussed the dagim, whereas Tosafot there already distinguished and said, on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, Tosaf says, kirvei dagim, lav hainu shemen dagim. There is a distinction between kirvei dagim and shemen dagim. Shemen dagim is actually the oil from the fish itself, from the eye of the fish, basically fish oil, that's mentioned here in the Mishnah, whereas what we discussed before is what Rashi defines over here, which is kirei dagim sheni mochu. Whereas Rashi defines shemen dagim in the Mishnah as same as what was mentioned on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph as kirei dagim sheni mochu. And it won't matter today's daf, it will matter further on. Shemen pakuot, Rashi says that a pakuot are delat midbari, it's a wild gourd, if that is mikolosint, vitran. Already we saw before, which is the dregs or the residue of the pitch. And beneft is some sort of petroleum product. You can only use olive oil. So my timer. Gemara goes back and wants to know, why can't you be madukim b'shem sreifa b'yom tov? What's the issue? Ki she'ein sorfim kodoshim b'yom tov. One cannot burn kodoshim and yom tov. Again, we dealt with this on Friday's daf. One can't burn kodoshim in order to rid oneself of the kodeshim and yom tov. Minahani mile, how do you know that's true? So Amar Chizkiya v'chein tana de bechizkiya, Amar Kual, the pasuk says, lo tuturim menu ad boker. One may not leave it over until the morning. This is leftovers of a korban. Korban whose time has already elapsed, expired, and you may not leave it until the morning. V'anotar mimenu ad boker ba'esh tisrofu. Whatever is left over until the morning is then burnt. So the boker here is unnecessary. Shein talama amar ad boker. The second ad boker is unnecessary. You could have read the pasuk, lo tuturim mimenu ad boker. V'anotar mimenu ba'esh tisrofu. Why do you need ad boker? Already, we know that. That term has already been defined. The time period has been defined. To say ad boker again is completely unnecessary, extraneous. Ad boker. Comes to teach you that there's an additional day to burn it. The additional day, here we're talking about the Korban HaPesach. So the Korban HaPesach is brought on Erev HaPesach. It's eaten that night. Must be finished either before Chatzot or the break of dawn the next morning. When it's left over the next morning, you're on Yom Tov. And then it says Boker Sheni. A Boker Sheni means the day later, which would be Chol HaMoed. So you have to wait until Chol HaMoed to burn the leftovers of the Korban HaPesach, and you cannot burn it on Yom Tov itself. So here we have a pasuk that teaches us this. Abaye Amar, Amar Kra, the pasuk says, Olad Shabbat b'Shabbato, v'lo olad chol b'Shabbat, v'lo olad chol b'Yom Tov. The Olah of Shabbat may be brought on Shabbat, but the Olad Chol, if it's something that derives from a Korban of Chol, that may not be brought on Shabbat. So on Erev Shabbat, if you have Korbanot that are left over, they cannot be placed on the Mizbeach on Shabbat. And similarly, with Korbanot of Chol that come into Yom Tov, you cannot burn them on Yom Tov. So just like over there, even there, though they're Tzorech HaMizbeach, nevertheless, we restrict you from placing them on Mizbeach on Shabbat and Yom Tov, then certainly when we're talking about the burning of Kodashim that are left over, that you can't do that on Shabbat or on Yom Tov. Rav Amar, Amar Kra, Hu, Levado Yaseh Lachem, Hu, Velo Machshirim, Levado, Velo Milash, Lo Bizmana, Da'ati B'Kav V'Chomer. Pasuk says, with regards to Ochel Nefesh, the Heter of Ochel Nefesh, that it says, Hu, Levado Yaseh Lachem, that only for your own needs can you do. Hu, That which you can do below machshirim, not preparatory items. So for instance, one is allowed to cook on Yom Tov. One is allowed to perform a Brit Milah on Yom Tov. One is not allowed to make the knife to do the Brit Milah. One is not allowed to make the oven in order to cook in it on Yom Tov. So that's called a machshirin. You may not prepare machshirin because those are things that could have been done prior to Yom Tov. Where things that couldn't have been done prior to Yom Tov, like cooking, like doing the Brit Milah, those are permitted on Yom Tov. And a milah that's not in a timely manner, it's not on the eighth day, because you would have thought that you could do a milah on Yom Tov, even though it wasn't the eighth day, because of a kavachomer. What this kavachomer is subject to machloket here in the Rishonim. Rashi brings the simple kavachomer that's used later on in our Masechta, which is that we have a hierarchy, which is that Zerat is doche et ha'avoda, avoda is doche et ha'shabbat, and we know that Mila is doche et ha'tzarat. One has Zerat, a nega Zerat, he may not do avoda in the Mikdash. One who does avoda in the Mikdash may do avoda on Shabbat. There are avoda korbanot that are doche et ha'shabbat. Again, if I put them in order, I have Zerat trumps avoda, avoda trumps Shabbat. When it comes to Brit Milah, we learn from the Psukim that Brit Milah is doche et ha'tzarat. If one has a nega on the Makoma Milah, you can perform the Milah, even though you're going to cut away a Negatzarat, which is not permitted. So despite that fact, you're allowed to do it. So we now have that Milah's trumps Tzarat, Tzarat trumps Avoda, Avoda trumps Shabbat. So the transitive property would say that Milah is Doche Shabbat. Now Milah is Doche Tzarat, whether it's Bizmana, whether it's Shalom Bizmana, whether it's a timely Milah on the eighth day or not a timely Milah, it is Doche Tzarat. And therefore, you would have thought that it should also be Doche Shabbat and Yom Tov. Along comes the Pasuk to say, no, that it's only Levado, V'lo L'milah, Shlo B'Zmanah, Da'adjei V'chomer. And then, U'memeilo Shmainen, Rashi says, the mitzvah she'ein zmana kavua, any mitzvah doesn't have a fixed time, V'yechol l'asoto machar, eno Doche Yom Tov. And you could just as well do it the next day, that's not Doche Yom Tov. V'adin l'srifat kodeshim t'meim. And that's similar to kodeshim t'meim, have that same din. The Tosafot brings an alternative. He says, "Rav Yosef Porat lo garis the achi b'kavachomer." He's not garis that in our Gemara. To have a lav kavachomer namiatu, you could have learned out without a kavachomer. The ati asay v'doche lo tasay. You have the asay of milah that's doche the lo tasay of malacha on Yom Tov. So you should be able to perform a milah on Yom Tov unless you have this restriction from the pasuk. So he says that we would have known milah shelo bizmana independent of the kavachomer. You would have just known it because it's asay doche. Lo tase. The other possibility, Rima Faresh, Daji Bakavachomer, Darim and Devot. Learn out of Kavachomer from the Nidarim and Devot. Nidarim and Devot are voluntary karbanot that one is permitted to bring on Yom Tov. They are Doche Yom Tov. Afagav, Shalom Nikrachutu Alem Yugvimo Britot. Like we saw in this week's Parsha, that Brit Milah has 13 Britot, 13 covenants that are associated with it. The word Brit is used 13 times in the Parsha Tamilah, which we saw at the end of this week's Parsha. And therefore, Milah has a higher standing than Nidarim and Nidavot. And we see that Nidarim and Nidavot, you're allowed to bring on Yom Tov. It's Doche Yom Tov. So too, Brit Milah should also be Doche Yom Tov. The last answer is given by Ravashi. Ravashi Amar, Shabbaton Aseh. That Yom Tov does not only involve a Lot Aseh, it also involves a positive commandment of Shabbaton, to rest, to be Shavot. Whatever that includes, the Rambam and the Ramban have this mitzvah to say both by Shabbat and by Yom Tov. They define it slightly differently, but they indicate in general that there is a positive commandment on Shabbat to make it basically Shabbos dik. Yom Tov has both aspects now. You're not allowed to do malacha on Yom Tov. Also, there's an asay to make it Yom Tov, to rest on Yom Tov. Vein asay doche lo tasei vasei. Brit Milah is simply an asay. So unless I have a specific pasuk being matir me, I may not be doche et Yom Tov. That'll be true by Mila Shelo Bizmana. It'll also be true by Korbanot of either Korbanot or Srifata Korbanot. None of those will be permitted to be doche Yom Tov because they are simply a positive commandment. Positive commandment going up against a lo tase v'ase does not work. Now, it's not clear how that works. Tosafot in different places discusses why that's the case. One possibility is to say that the ase makes the lo tase into a stronger lo tase. So I have a regular essay. A regular essay can trump or override a lot essay. When I have a lot essay that's coupled with an essay, that makes it into a super lot essay. And it's a super lot essay, you can't be dochet. That's one way Tosfot reads it. In other places Tosfot reads it as, well, it's essay, dochet lot essay. So I have my essay and I got rid of the lot essay. But then I'm still left with the assay, and that's what causes me the problem. So those are two different ways to look at it. It obviously has nafkaminot when you have different types of lotases. Assay doche lotasei may only apply to simple lotases. If you have a lotasei that includes karet with it, then depending on why you think the reason here, again, whether you think it's a super lotase versus it's doche lotase, if the assay remains, make a difference when you have a super lotase, like a lotase that includes karet, whether the assay can be doche or not. Enough community between those reasons that Tosafot brings. Right, the other thing is, why, in the end, is truma asura bisreifa on Yom Tov? The truth is that all the psukim and all things that we just discussed refer to kodashim, not to truma. Eicha yavin in truma mi kodashim. That's what it says. The kodashim dinu shein sreifatan docha yom tov v'fein she'en yochol lehenot b'shat sreifa. It's a simple difference between kodashim and truma. Kodashim, when you burn them, you can get no benefit from them. Shem and sreifa, when you burn it, you're allowed to get benefit from it. Whether it's heat, whether it's light, you're allowed to benefit from them. The whole problem of burning the kodashim on yom tov is that you don't get any benefit from it. But if you do get benefit from it, it sounds like it would be permissible. So why isn't truma permissible? Tosafot here quotes something that they say in Beitza as well, which is that when it comes to sreifa on Yom Tov, it has to be some tzorech. It has to be some tzorech hayom, at least partially. Rashi over there says, when we say hutra sreifa on Yom Tov or havara on Yom Tov, means you can do as you please. You can burn anything you want, doesn't matter anymore. Tosafot over there still requires at least a minimum tzorech that has some reason that you're burning it, some connection to Yom Tov. So Tosafot over here says, "Avot zarech sheik tzat tzorech litchamem ulishum hana, aval havara legamer shelo tzorech lo hutra." But at least you have that by truma. You do have that small tzorech. He says, "Vomeriva devada garde kevin she asra torah kolanot rakanat tzreifa." Torah doesn't let you get any benefit you want from truma that's nisrefa or truma tmeya. Imkein havara zuin letzorech hanato elishem mitzvat tzreifa. Let's be clear. The reason you're burning the Shem and Sreifa is because you're supposed to burn it. The reason you're burning the Truma Tmeya is not to get Hana from it. The reason you're burning the Truma Tmeya is because you have to obliterate, you have to eliminate this Truma Tmeya. Happens to be that you're allowed a side benefit from it. Being allowed that side benefit from it doesn't mean that that's the reason that you're burning it. And therefore, on Yom Tov, we would not permit you to burn it, even though there is benefit that you're allowed to take from this. That's one answer. Or, the Reuves Mefaresh, the Insurfim Kodshim B'Yom Tov, Perish, Gazru Truma Atu Kodoshim. The Re says that it's a Gzera Atu. Because you're not a born Kodoshim in Yom Tov, so you can't burn Truma as well, because you might mix it up. If you burn Truma, you might think you can burn Kodoshim. It's Gzera Dirabanan. Does what else? Why don't you make Gzera that you can't burn Truma Tmeya, because you might burn Truma Tmeya She'enu Tzarech. That's something you don't need. You don't need the light, you don't need the heat. That would also be problematic in Yom Tov. Does what says? That's L'Shchiach. It's not common. So most times you're going to use the light, you're going to use the heat. So they made a Gzera Otu Kodoshim. So that's the reasons behind why Sherman Sreifa is impermissible on Yom Tov, and we saw as well, obviously on Shabbat, there are additional possibilities of issues with Sherman Sreifa, but we know that's also be Yom Tov, and therefore it is also usher on Shabbat, either Otu Yom Tov, or for Yom Tov, Shabbat, Erev Shabbat, or because of Shemayate. We saw all the different reasons that were brought before in the Gemara that apply to Shabbat as well. The Gemara says, V'yom tov, hu, dasir. From all we've discussed so far, it sounds like the sreifa of Truma Tmeya is only problematic on Yom Tov. Ha b'chol shapridam. That sounds like on a weekday you would be permitted to benefit from it. My time, huh? Amrav, shem shemitzvah l'srof kodoshim shenitme'u, kach mitzvah l'srof et truma shenitmeit. Just like there's a mitzvah to burn kodoshim that became tmeim, so too there's a mitzvah to be burned truma that was nitmeit. Again, for the reasons that we discussed before, which is that kodoshim, the reason is we don't want there to be a takala. We don't want people to get into trouble with this item. And therefore we want it burnt or eliminated so that people don't get into trouble. So the same is true by truma as by kodeshim. Truma tmeya is not allowed to be eaten. Just like kodeshim that are either nitmeit or notar, gone over their time period, have to be burnt because they can't be eaten anymore. And then the Torah permitted you to get benefit while it's burning. Where it says, Eichan amra Torah. Where did the Torah tell us this? So I gave you my mishmeret. Here is the guarding of trumotai, of my trumot. Here, the trumotai, it's not trumati, which would be trumash sheli, but trumotai, which is trumot sheli, the plural of trumot. Why are there multiple trumot? So in Pashtura Pasuk, you could just say that Trumotai means all Trumot that they receive. But here, the Gemara dashes on Trumotai in the plural form, B'shtei Trumot HaKadu Medaber. Torah is talking about two types of Trumot. Achad Trumat Teorah, V'chad Trumat Tmeya. One is Trumat Teorah, which you must guard from becoming Tmeah. V'chad Trumat Tmeya. Aram HaRuchmano L'cho. Ani Yineid Itati L'cho. I gave this to you. Shalchat Hei L'sika Takat Tavshilcha. You may use it, you're permitted to use it for your own benefit. And therefore, when you're guarding the Truma, guarding Truma Torah makes sense, because you're preventing it from coming to Me'ah, and you're eating it. So that makes sense. But guarding Truma Me'ah, what is Mishmeret? What is that you're doing with the Truma Me'ah? The only thing you're doing is burning it. So the answer is that, L'cho, you get to use it, you get to utilize it. And that's the benefit of Truma Me'ah. When you're burning it, point may utilize it. So it says about Meiser Sheni in the Vidui Maser that's found in Parshat Ki Tavo. It says Lo Biarti Mimenu B'Tamei. I did not burn it, remove it when Tamei. Biarti here means to consume it. I did not eat it when I was Tamei.
Nor did I
burn it, remove it when Tamei. When it comes to Meiser Sheni, you cannot burn it when it's tamei. Trumat shenitmeit, you can be mavir. Ve'ika mimenu yata mavir, lata mavir shemen shel kodesh shenitma. How do you know? Here we're talking about ma'aser sheni. It's excluding something. How do you know that it's excluding trumat tmeya? Maybe it's excluding kodesh shenitmeit. So lav kavachomer, it's a kavachomer. Ma ma'aser akal. We're talking about ma'aser, which is not as chamur as kodeshim. Kodeshim are a much higher level of kedusha than ma'aser sheni. Amra Torah lo biarti mimenu b'tamei. It's not eliminated when it's tamei. Kodesh chamur lo koshikein. Kodesh or kodeshim that are much more chamur, of course. I say as well, you could say the same thing about truma. Hi halchi truma nami leim b'kav v'chomer hu. Why don't you say the same thing about truma? Truma has a higher designation than ma'aser sheni. Truma is more kodesh than ma'aser sheni. Hakti mimenu. Because we have the miut in the pasuk. The pasuk says something is not like ma'aser sheni, so we have to pick something. So Mar says, Umar Raita. So then how did you decide which one it is? How did you know between Truma and Kodeshim? Both are more Chamor, more Kodesh than Ma'aser Sheni. How do I know which one to eliminate? The answer will be, I'll eliminate the one that is less Kadosh. So I have to look at Kodeshim versus Truma, which one has a higher level of Kedusha. That's what Gemara is about to do. Mistabra Kodesh lo mimihatna shekein. It makes sense that we will not exclude Kodesh because here the Gemara says Siman, like in parentheses, Siman is Panak Akas, which is six items that make kodeshim more chamur, which is number one, pigol. They have a din of pigol, which a person who has a machshava to eat the korban outside of the zman, outside of the time period where it's normally consumed, and then does the korban properly, the remainder of the avodat korban properly, and he eats it, is in violation of an iser pigol. Iser pigol, through machshava, only applies to korbanot, does not apply to truma. Notar. Such a concept as leftovers, that there's an expiration, that there's a designated time when you can eat kodeshim, that applies to kodeshim, that is not true by Truma Korban, that it has a status or a shame korban, it's called a korban in the Torah.
And it may be mukrav al gabei hamizbeach,
which is also a higher level form. Mi'ila, if it is misappropriated, one has violated the ownership of Hekdesh or of Hashem over the item, one has to then, number one, pay the item, the karen, the chomesh, and then bring a korban, me'ila. So those items are also a chumrah that is in kodeshim. Even though, technically, when it comes to the time of eating kodeshim, there is no me'ila already. Once it's heter the kohanim, there is no me'ila. But there still exists within kodeshim the possibility of coming into contact with me'ila. Vikaret. And one who eats kodeshim bitumat aguf, one is tamei, and they eat kodeshim, they're chayav karet. And asur le'onein. And the last thing is that an onein, it's asur for an onein to eat it. Ma'aser sheni may not be eaten by an onein because it's a din of simcha. Then we learn from that a kavachomer to kodeshim that's also may not be eaten by an onein. That is not true by truma. Truma can be eaten by an onein. Rashi brings the limud. It says, zaruta martilchav lo aninut. One of the dashins that only a zar is impermissible in truma, not an onein. Onein is permissible to eat truma. There's no din of simcha. By Ma'aser Sheni, there's a din to eat it b'simcha, so an onein may not eat it. But by truma, there's no din of simcha. So adarava, truma, la lo me'ma'itna, let's not exclude truma, shukain, machpaz, siman. We have four items over here. One is mita, someone who eats truma, whether it's a zar, someone who's not allowed to eat truma, or it's a kohen who's tamei, who eats it, gets mita b'dei shamayin, chomesh, One who eats truma when they're not supposed to eat truma has to replace that truma and then has to add on an additional chomesh, has to add on an additional fifth on top of it. And then ve'ein la pidyon, it has no ability to be redeemed. Truma always remains truma. You cannot redeem it in any way. It's supposed to kodeshim, which you can redeem. And vasura the zarim. And zarim cannot eat it, as opposed to korbanot. You have certain korbanot like shlamim, todah, maser, that can be eaten by non-kohanim. But here, by truma, there's never a case where a zar can participate it. The answer to the Gemara is, hanach nefishan, that kodeshim have six items that makes them above maaser sheni, versus the four items that we found by truma. So if I look at a hierarchy, maaser sheni is the most kal, then truma is more chamor, and then kodeshim is even more chamor. So if I say by maaser sheni, it comes to exclude something, what's it going to come to exclude? It's going to come to exclude the case of truma. So when it comes to exclude the case of truma, that says that truma can be biarti mimenu b'tamei. When it's tamei, I could burn it. I can benefit from that by burning or eliminating the truma tameyat. Now, in terms of chomesh, we just said before that there is a dinam ilah by kodeshim. That means if you eat kodeshim, you also be chayav in karen b'chomesh because of me'ilah. And we said one of the chumrot by truma is the fact that you pay a chomesh, but you also pay a chomesh by kodeshim. The difference being is that once you reach heter lekohanim, by kodeshim, once kohanim are permitted to eat it, there's no din me'ilah, and you wouldn't pay a keren v'chomesh. Truma never has a heter to anyone except the kohanim, and even with heter lekohanim, you still pay the chomesh. So that's a chumrah by truma over kodeshim. The last thing, this is something we discussed in other places, which is, what is the difference between karet and mita bidei shemayim? What does karet trump mita bidei shemayim? They both involve death. So why is karet over here any different than mita bidei shemayim? They both say God's going to take one's life early. Rashi says that over here. So truma v'mita bidei shemayim yamav niktzarim avel eino holeich ariri. Exactly what Joel just pointed out. Rashi is pretty consistent everywhere. He says that karet involves two punishments. Karet is number one, the punishment for the individual themselves, that their life will be shortened. And the other is that their offspring will be impacted by karet. Whereas mita bidei shemayim only affects the individual themselves. That's the way Rashi distinguishes. Tosafot here points out that he doesn't think that is correct. He says the real difference between karet and midei shemayim is that karet has a cap. Karet, one may not live past a certain date. Like Gemara discusses in other places, whether it's 60 years, 40 years, whatever it is, karet has an automatic cutoff. One may not live past a certain age. Mita bidei shemayim just says that you will die early, not the age. There's no cutoff age for that. As far as offspring is concerned, Tosafot says that's not the case. And that is because there's a difference between karet and karet ariri. Karet is just standard karet, which is the individual's affected. The Torah uses karet ariri. That means that not only is the individual affected, that their offspring are affected. And only when it says ariri. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, says that that's not the case. It's also machloket, the Rambam and the Ramban also argue about what the meaning of karet is. The Rambam says karet is not a physical karet, but a spiritual karet that the neshama is cut off from connecting with God eventually, which is the ultimate olam haba, is shenei nafsho kshura, that the nefesh of Adam is connected to God and reaches that ultimate end when they passed away and the guf leaves and the neshama returns to Hashem. The Rambam says karet means that that person will not reach it. The Ramban takes issue with that and he says, I can't see that being true. Can't be that everything that there's a chiyuv karet for means the person's never going to have quote-unquote olam haba, never connect with God. So therefore, the Ramban divides up karet into different categories. There are certain karet which are chamur, significant, whether it's avodah zarah, Shabbat, that might involve what the Rambam says. And there's the normal karet that you find, that karet does not involve being cut off, al olam haba. So we have many Rishonim discussing the issue of karet. We discussed it in Kretot and other places where we actually discussed the issue of karet and the punishment of karet. But just know that here again it comes up because of this distinction between mita bidei shemayim and the karet. All right, now the Gemara continues. But there's one other option. V'ibay teima, kodesh chamor, shken anush karet. It's pretty simple that it's an anush karet versus an anush midei shemayim. Nachman Yitzchak Amar Kra, titein lo, lo velo do ro, michlal debat oro. Here, when it says that you have to give it to the Kohen, it says titein lo, you must give it to him. And the drasha we make from that is that you give it to him lo, velo do ro. It's given to him to eat, but not to burn. If you have to exclude burning, that means that somewhere else it is mutar to burn it. And that means that there is a case where truma can be burnt, and that's a case when it's truma tmeya. When it comes to reshit de gancha titein lo, that's when it's tahor. But when it's tamei or it's trumat tameah, in that instance we say it does get, it's bat oro, it does get burnt. They have three different ways to learn out the fact that it's trumat tameah is burnt and that one may get hanah from it. Again, we had the possibility of learning it out here from titein lo, possibility of learning out the distinction that it's a miut from maiso sheni. Why are we might eat that and not kodeshim? It's because either kodeshim are more chamur or because the difference between karet and midayt v'shamayim. And the original answer was that we learned it out from shtei trumot. Because it says it's mishmer trumotai, so the trumat meyah is also something where you get lecha, that you, the kohen, are allowed to benefit from it. And now the Gemara moves on, Rabbi Shmuel Omer. What's the problem that Rabbi Shmuel has with a medikim b'itran, that one may not use itran? So my time, Arova mitoch shirei chora. It says because it has a bad odor to it. It's malodorous. Gezeira, shemi yinichena v'yetzei. Whoa, so what's the problem with that? Well, if it's malodorous, he might leave the house. And he may, the smell may be so overwhelming or so difficult to bear that he's going to leave his house. So Amalei, bayi v'yetzei. What's the big deal? So he leaves his house. Why do we care if he leaves his house? So Amalei, she'ani omer, hadlakat ner shabbat chova. So I say lighting a candle on Shabbat is an obligation. Well, how does that answer the question? So Rashi and Tosafot on the spot say this, Chova, Kvod Shabbatu. It's Kavod Shabbat, She'ein Suda Chashuva El Makom Or, Ke'en Yomama. A Sudat Shabbat is not considered to be a Chasub Suda unless you eat it wherein there's light there. You need light in order to have the Sudat Shabbat, like daytime. You have to have lighting to make the meal into a significant meal of Shabbat. Tosafot says the same thing, Perish V'Makom Suda. But you have Ner Shabbat in the place where you have Suda. It's part of the oneg of Shabbat, is to eat a meal in the place where there's lighting. I mean, you know that, if you can't see your food, you also don't taste your food as much. It's not as much pleasure in eating when you can't see it. So Abai wouldn't have asked about ner in general, that it's an obligation. Here, the obligation that we're speaking about is the obligation to have light during the meal. Dama Rav Nachman bar Rav Zavdov Amri lo Amar Rav Nachman bar Rav Amar Rav Haloka ner b'Shabbat chuva. Lighting a candle on Shabbat is an obligation. V'chitzad yadayim raglayim b'vchamin arvit reshut. Washing one's hands in hot water going into the Shabbat arvit is a reshut. That's an optional thing to bathe for Shabbat. V'ani omer mitzvah. And I say it's a mitzvah. My mitzvah. What do you mean it's a mitzvah? Dama Rav Yehuda Marav Kach haya minagosh Rav Yehuda bar Ilai. This was the practice of Rav Yehuda bar Ilai. Erev Shabbat mivin lo areva mleya chamin. On Erev Shabbat, they used to bring him a trough, a bowl full of hot water. Ruchetz panav yadav raglav. He used to bathe. He used to wash his hands, his feet, his face. Umitatef. And then he wrapped himself up. Yoshev b'sadinin hamitzu yatzin. He would sit there with his linen clothing. Linen, because the whitest clothing that you could have is made out of linen. So he'd be white linen begadim hamitzu yatzin that had tzitzit on them. V'domeh l'malach Hashem tzvakot. And he was looked like a malach. That's what he looked like when he was wrapped up like this. Vayu tamidav michavim mimenu. Then his tamidim used to hide from him. Kanfei sutan, the corners of their begadim. Amar lehen banai lo kach shaniti lechem. Didn't I teach you this? Sadin b'tzitzit. If you have a linen garment, then you put tzitzit on it. Tzitzit are made out of wool. How do you know that? Because tchelet. Tchelet has to be made from wool. So the tzitzit that go on a linen beged have to be a problem of kilayim. Because you have a linen beged with tzitzit made out of wool. Beit Shammai putrim. Beit Shammai says that if you have a sadin, if you have a linen beged, you do not put on tzitzit. Beit Hillel, michayivin. Beit Hillel says you do put on tzitzit. Baloch is like Beit Hillel. So I don't understand why you, my talmidim, are not putting tzitzit on your linen garments. Beinu savrei is talmidim held gzeira mishum ksut laila. They were worried about Ksut Laila. I'm not going to address it now because the sugya comes up again on the next couple of daf, so I'll address it then because there's a lot more to do here in terms of Hadlaka Nerot Shabbat. But the problem is that either it's a beged that is only worn at night, and since it's a beged only worn at night, it's not chayav and tzitzit, and therefore if you put tzitzit on it, you'll be in violation of kilayim for a beged that's not chayav and tzitzit, and therefore you don't have the dispensation to wear kilayim. The other possibility is at night. It's a beggar that you wear at night, and at night you're patur min a tzitzit because you retem oto, you have to see the tzitzit, have your patur from tzitzit, and you wear them anyway, then you're chayav in kilayim. Tosafot takes issue with that explanation. Again, we'll deal with it. We spoke about it in Menachot as well, this issue of ksut laila, makloket harishonim, what exactly the problem is with ksut laila, and again, it'll come up in the Gemara as well. But you see here that the practice of Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai was to wash and get himself ready, prepare himself for the Shabbat and coming into the Shabbat. One more line in the Gemara, and then we'll discuss about Halakha Ner Shabbat, which is, Batiznach mishalom nafshi. My soul was removed from peace. Nashiti tova. I've forgotten all goodness. My batiznach mishalom nafshi. What does it mean that I've removed all peace from my soul? Rebao zu hadakat ner Shabbat. This is lighting the candles for Shabbat. Nashiti tova. I've forgotten all good. I'm Rabiria zu beit amerchatz. This is going to the bathhouse. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Zu rechitzat yadayim raglayim bechamim. That's washing one's hands and feet in hot water. Yitzchanach Amar zu mita na'a. It's a beautiful bed, v'kelim na'im shaleha, and beautiful utensils on top of it. Biyav Amar zumita mutzet, bisham mekushetet l'tamidei chachamim. This is a bed that is laid, and a beautiful woman who is dressed up for tamidei chachamim. Now, we have here in the Gemara what seems to be different reasons for hadlakat neirot Shabbat. Which is, at one point, the Gemara seems to indicate that the reason you light neirot on Shabbat is because ner Shabbat chuva, because you need to eat the suda. It's light for the Se'uda. Over here, then the Gemara says that it seems to be another reason, which the Gemara brought before as well. The Gemara back on Chav Gimel said, when I have a competition between Ner Shabbat and Ner Chanukah, Ner Shabbat Adif, Ner Beito Adif. Why is Ner Beito Adif? Rashi over there says, Mipnei Shalom Bayit. It's a problem in Shalom Bayit. Because as Rashi says over here, Adlak at Ner B'Shabbat, Shalom Yama Meladik, U'makom Shein Ner, Ain Shalom, Shalom Chunikshav Olech Ba'Feila. But the problem here is that if you don't light a candle, you're not going to have Shalom Bayit. So it seems to me that the Gemara here brings two different reasons for Hadlakat Ner Shabbat. One is problem of eating the meal without light. The other one is a problem of Shalom Bayit. And there seem to be independent reasons. The question is, what is the reason for lighting Ner Shabbat? So what's interesting is the Rambam himself, when he codifies the Halacha of Ner Shabbat, actually brings the Halacha down twice. He brings down the Halacha once in Perek Hei, and he brings it also in Perek Lamed. The Rambam, when he brings it in Perek Hay, discusses that the mitzvah of Hadlakat Nerot Shabbat is Pnei Onega Shabbat. It's for Oneg Shabbat. In Perek Lamed, he brings it again, Hadlakat Nerot Shabbat, and he says that it's me, Lekavod Shabbat. It's for honor the Shabbat. So Rambam himself notes the problem in the Gemara, and actually codifies the halacha that there are actually two dinim in Hadlakat Nerot Shabbat. There's a din in Kavod HaShabbat, and there's a din in Oneg HaShabbat. So that they're both applicable in terms of the din of Neirot Shabbat. Now, what does that mean, that one is Kavod HaShabbat, one is Oneg Shabbat? So there's a very famous Reb Chaim. It doesn't read perfectly into the Rambam. It's somewhat difficult in the Rambam himself. But the Reb Chaim distinguishes and says, what's the difference between something that's Kavod HaShabbat and something that's Oneg Shabbat? The Reb Chaim says, something that's Oneg HaShabbat is something that you do on Shabbat itself. Something that you enjoy or get benefit from on Shabbat itself. Kavod HaShabbat is something that can also be done prior to Shabbat. You can also create Kavod HaShabbat on Shabbat. The Rambam discusses items that you can do on Shabbat itself, and even on Motzei Shabbat that are Kavod HaShabbat. But it doesn't have to be on Shabbat. It can be even prior to Shabbat, you can do Kavod HaShabbat. So when you light in anticipation of the Shabbat, that is considered to be Kavod HaShabbat, not an Oneg HaShabbat. The difference will be, and this does have an Afmin Halacha, is, for instance, what happens if you have a candle that's already burning? You have a candle that's already lit, and you're coming into the Shabbat. Now, if the din is a din in Kavod HaShabbat, then you must light the candle specifically for Shabbat. So having a candle that is lit will not suffice. One will have to extinguish that candle, and then relight the candle in order to have Kavod HaShabbat. If the reason is Oneg HaShabbat, which means that you must be in a location where there is or, where there is light, then that would be classified as Oneg HaShabbat, and you don't need to light it specifically for that. You just have to have light there when you come into the Shabbat. So if there's a candle already lit, there will be no necessity to light again. Based on that, the Beit Halevi in his Shu'ot says that's the difference between Kavod HaShabbat and Oneg HaShabbat. You would only make a bracha on Neirot Shabbat if you're doing the Kavod HaShabbat. Because there you must specifically light for the intention of Shabbat. Whereas if it's Oneg Shabbat, you wouldn't make a bracha because if the light was already lit, you wouldn't have to light a new light. The Oneg Shabbat means that there's light present. That's all you need there. That's the distinction that he draws between Oneg and Kavod HaShabbat. Now, Rav Meir Lichtenstein pointed out once that it's actually Mduyak in the Mishnayot. He thinks that the Gemara actually derived it from the Mishnayot because the Mishnayot actually involved two lists of Shmanim that are improper to use on Shabbat. We had Mishnah Aleph that said these are Shmanim that you may not use on Shabbat. And then we had a second list of Shmanim which you may not have for Shabbat as well. Now, in the first list, we said what was the reason that you may not light with those Shmanim is because Shemei Yateh. Right? Because you might come to tilt it and to move it around. Over here, what's the reason that you may not light with these Shmanim? Right? It's Rechel Ra, that you might leave the house. You might be pushed out of the house. So the difference might be in terms of what the focus of the Mishnayot is. Is the focus in the person being present with light in the house? And that's Oneg HaShabbat. That's the second list of Shmonim. The reason we don't use those is because Oneg Shabbat, because of the issue of eating the Seudah b'makomor. And that's why we don't allow you to light within, because it's going to push you out of the house. The first list of Shema Yateh is for the light itself. What's the light for? We said Shalom Bayit, so people can see around, so they can be present. And that list is an issue of Shalom Bayit. And the reason you can't do that is Shema Yateh, in order to have the light, give off a proper light for Shalom Bayit. So he says actually maybe Miduyak out of the Mishnayot, that the two lists, one list is dealing with the issue of Shalom Bayit, lighting for the purpose of the light of Shalom Bayit, and the second one is dealing with your presence in the light, that you must be present in the light to eat the Seudah in the presence of light. And that would be the distinction. The other thing to note is that Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal in Shirim HaZecher Avi Umuri points out this theory in the Rambam, but he also makes another point, which is, when it comes to Kavod HaShabbat, the Rambam lists items that you do the Kavod HaShabbat, like we saw here in the Gemara. What is that? Number one, you wash your hands, your feet. Now number two is, sit yourself, mitatef. You cover your head, you sit the Kavod Rosh. Number three is that you put on something, a beged mitzuyetzet. Put on something that has tzitzit on it. Where else do we have those same requirements? By davening. By davening shacharit, the Rambam lists things that are ma'akev, that you're not allowed to daven. Rechitzat yadayim reglayim. Sitting the Kavod Rosh in the proper place. Putting on a beged tzitzit. You mentioned that in Hilchot Tzitzit. It's the same din by davening. So it's very interesting that you have a parallel between coming into Shabbat and coming into Tefillah. Rav Soloveitchik over there gives an answer. Again, I heard from Rav Meir Lichtenstein also a nice idea that the difference might be here between what the Rambam mentions has to do with the difference in what you're trying to prepare for. One is a preparation of the individual for approaching the Shabbat. The individual must prepare themselves in order that they are giving honor, kavod to the Shabbat. There's also a secondary requirement, which is that one must prepare the house for Shabbat. Why would you prepare the house for Shabbat? Because exactly what we have here and in other places, which is Boi Netzei Likrat HaKala, that Shabbat coming in is like the Shabbat HaMelech. It's an important guest coming into the house. So not only do you have to prepare oneself for Shabbat, but one also light candles in the house, not to prepare themselves, but to prepare the house. That's the Gemara that we find later on in Kuf Yud Tet. And when a person returns from shul on Friday night, comes home and two malachim accompany him. And the malachim come into the house and they see whether the bed is made, the table is set, whether everything is prepared and the candles are lit. What does that have to do with? That's not because of you. That's preparation for the important guest of Shabbat that's coming in. And so because of that, the malachim come to check out whether the house is ready for Shabbat. Light being on in the house is an invitation for people to come in. How do you indicate you don't want someone to come out? You shut the light off. You make it dark outside so people don't come up to the door. You put on lights, that's an indication of invitation for someone to come in, for the Shabbat to come in. And that way, the Kavod HaShabbat that's mentioned in Perek Lamed,
Halacha Bet,
not Kavod HaShabbat for the individual bringing Kavod HaShabbat, but prepared for the guest, the important guest that's coming. As opposed to Kavod HaShabbat that's mentioned in Perek Lamed,
Halacha Gimel,
which is about the individual's Kavod HaShabbat for the individual. So those are the two different aspects of Ner Shabbat, which is important. Both of them are important. Turns out that maybe the Mishnayot even reflect that difference that the Gemara is mentioning over here. The second machloket, it's actually mentioned in the Tosafot here, is a problem as far back as the Geonim, which is there a bracha on Neirot Shabbat? The Gemara never ever mentions that there's a bracha on Neirot Shabbat and never gives a formula for what the bracha on Neirot Shabbat is. We saw earlier in the Gemara that there's a bracha for Ner Chanukah, Ladik Ner Shel Chanukah, but Ladik Ner Shel Shabbat does not appear here. The Rav Yeh says it appears in the Yushalmi, but in the Bavli, there's clearly no bracha. Because of that, there developed a machloket about within the Gonim and the time of the Gonim already, whether you make a bracha on Neirot Shabbat. The issue that really arises is because of here. It says, Alaka Ner Shabbat Chova is an obligation. There's another place in the Gemara in Chulin, which also says a mitzvah is Chova, is Mayim Achronim Chova. That washing Mayim Achronim is an obligation. Over there, the Bahag writes, the difference between Chova and mitzvah is whether you make a bracha. Something's an obligation, it's a chovah because of sakana. You're doing it only to eliminate danger. You're not lighting for the sake of lighting. You're lighting because the lighting then gives you something else. And when you do that, when it's an obligation to light, then you do not make a bracha. So some, like the Rabbeinu Meshulam here is quoted in Tosfot, extended that din, that just like by Mayim Achronim you don't make a bracha, so too by Neirot Shabbat you won't make a bracha, because it's a chovah, it's an obligation. Tosfot says, no, chovah here does not differentiate between like what it means by Mayim Achronim. Chovah here means that chovas shel mitzvat oneg Shabbat. It's an obligation for oneg Shabbat. Not that it's obligatory like we look by mayim achronim. There's some sort of danger. There's some sort of other ulterior motive here. No, it's for Shabbat itself that you're lighting it. And therefore you would make a bracha. It's a machloket between the Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Meshulam here. In Tosfot and Rabbeinu Tam, the Sefer Yashar, he actually brings the conversation back and forth between them arguing this issue. But the question of whether you make a bracha on Nerot Shabbat really revolves around what the purpose of Nerot Shabbat is. Before, like we saw in the shoot of the Beit HaLevi, if it's for Kavod Shabbat, then you would make a bracha on it. If it's Oneg Shabbat, there's a distinct possibility that you wouldn't have to make a bracha on it, because it's not something you have to do uniquely for Shabbat. You just have to have light there when you're eating. It doesn't have to be light for Shabbat, it just has to be light. Now, Balei HaTosfot clearly say, if you light, it's lighting for Oneg Shabbat. That difference probably arises from, and there was a professor,
Tashma,
who speculated that this was the case, that when you get to Ben Ashkenaz and the Bnei Tzarfat, they all believe that you make a bracha on Erot Shabbat. Why is that? Because, given where they are located, how far north they are located, most of them, and we know this evidence from the Gemara's here, that they brought in Shabbat before it was nightfall. They brought Shabbat in when it was still daylight outside. They had early Shabbat, almost there, because it was crazy to wait. To go to France today, you wait till 10:30 at night before you can bring in Shabbat. So they all brought in Shabbat early. You bring in Shabbat early and you light a candle during the daytime, it's clear that there's going to be one reason that you're lighting an air during the daytime. It's not for owning Shabbat, it's only for Kavod Shabbat, and it's clear that it's a religious ceremony. So once you reach that point in time where you're lighting candles during the day, it's clear that you've got to make a bracha on it, because otherwise there's no reason to light the candles. You have no reason to light the candles. When you're back in the time of the Gemara, the time of the Gonim, it was their source of lighting. I mean, they didn't have electric lights. We have electric lights today. To light a candle is only a religious ceremony. It's not really what provides us the light on Shabbat. Some people are makpid to turn on the electric lights when they light the candles as well, so that will have that aspect of it. But basically, the Nerot Shabbat today do not provide light. So it's clear that they're done the Kavod Shabbat, and they're a ritual lighting. And a ritual lighting will require a bracha, because otherwise there's no reason to light. It must be a mitzvah. So it's clear by the time you get to the time of the Rishonim, according to Presby, that you have to make a bracha because it's all ritual. It's clearly not for the purpose of light anymore. Especially today, we have that same problem. But the original source, and this is where the Gonim are arguing, and we know that there were practices where they did not make a bracha, was because it was simply their light. Because you put on an electric light, would you make a bracha? No, you need light in your house. You need to eat by light. That's not a reason for a bracha. That's a chovah. So that machloket exists between here, Rabbeinu Shalom, Rabbeinu Tam, but earlier, it exists. Again, whether Professor is right about the development of the bracha in that way, but the idea makes sense, which is to distinguish between when you're using the candles for light and when you're using them as a religious indication or a mitzvah. Clearly there's a difference whether you're going to make a bracha on that or not. And today we have the practice to make the bracha. The other machloket in the Gonim is, when are you mekabel Shabbat? What about lighting candles makes you mekabel Shabbat? So there are deot in the Gonim that the bracha itself is what makes you mekabel Shabbat. And because of that, developed the practice that we light the candles of Shabbat, and then you take the bracha afterwards, because otherwise if you made the bracha, you couldn't light the candles. There are many others in the Gonim and others that believe that the lighting of the candles is the Kabbalat Shabbat. So then you can make the bracha and light the candles. Others raise the issue, how about if you light, and it's brought in the Gonim, Tshuva the Gonim, what happens if you light many candles? After you've lit the first candle, then you're ready to mekabel Shabbat, how do you light the residual candles? So the Gonim there say, no, you're not mekabel Shabbat until you complete the lighting of all the candles. But that machloket about whether lighting or the bracha is mekabel Shabbat leads us to the practice that we have today to make the bracha afterwards, although Bnei Sfarad do make the bracha beforehand and then light the candles afterwards, because they pass on the Shulchan Aruch, but there's no question that they think the lighting of the candle is mekabel Shabbat. So Bnei Sfarad, anybody who's a Sfaradi, should make the bracha first and then light the candles even on Erev Shabbat. Rav Avadia Yosef paskens that way. Ashkenazim on Shabbat should light the candles, then make the bracha afterwards with Yom Tov. It's pretty strong evidence that one should make the bracha beforehand. There is a machloket amongst the Achronim, the Magen Avraham, and others about whether you should do it before or afterwards, subject for another time, but just be aware that there might be a difference. And Rav Avadia Yosef paskens for Ashkenazim that on Yom Tov they for sure make the bracha beforehand. That question also involves, why are you lighting candles? What is indicative through the lighting of the candles that is the Kabbalat Shabbat? So now, if you say it's the bracha, we understand, because you're saying Alik Ner Shel Shabbat. You're making it into Shabbat. But the lighting of the candles itself, why is that the Kabbalat of Shabbat? So some say, because it's the last melacha that you do. It's indicative. That's it. It's the Mishnah coming up later on when the husband says, what's done in the house? Halaganer, Alaktaner Shabbat. Is everything done? On the list of things that are done, it's the last thing that's done. It's the last melacha that you do coming into the Shabbat. That's the line or demarcation. of the crossover between Shabbat or not. Others say, again, because it's lit the Kavod HaShabbat, if you light for Kavod HaShabbat, it has to involve some sort of aspect of Kabbalat HaShabbat involved with it. Right, that's just a broad purview. I'll send you out the Mekorot on Nerot Shabbat. Right, we'll just finish up the Gemara quickly, and then we'll continue tomorrow, which is Tarabanan Ezu Ashir, who is someone who's wealthy, Kol Sheish Lo Nachat Ruach Be'ushro. So that's someone who gets enjoyment out of what he has. Dibri Rabbi Meir, the equivalent of what we have in the Mishnah and Avot. Sameach Bechoko, Ezu Ashir, someone who's happy with what he has. So that's someone who's rich. Rabbi Tarpan Omer, Kol Sheish Lo Kuf Kramim, Umei Asadot, V'Kuf Abadim, Shovdim Behem. Everybody has 100 vineyards, and 100 fields, and 100 servants that work in them. Anybody who has a woman who is beautiful in her actions. Anybody who has a bathroom that is proximate to his table. Again, in their day, the ability to go to the bathroom, they didn't have indoor plumbing. It was an outhouse, and you usually had to go far out into the field. It was not a matter of convenience. So someone who has the ability to go to the bathroom in a closer quarters to where they eat and where they live, that was a huge benefit. So Rashi asks, Ezu Ashir, why does the Gemara even ask this? He says, Nafkamina lemitrach ladurei anota. So Nafkamina, to know what you should try to accomplish or accumulate. You want to know what it means to be rich? I want to know what I should be accumulating here, or what I should be setting out to take care of. Obviously, this is a derivative of what we saw before in the Gemara, which was, the Gemara asked about, what is this? Nashiti tova, v'tisnach v'shalom nafshi. So there, the Gemara said, Nashiti tova, what is the tova that we were mentioning about? So we had mita na'a, kelim na'im shalea, Rabbi Avraham azu mita mutzet, v'isha mekushetet tamidei chachamim. Woman is mekushetet, that is adorned for tamidei chachamim. So some of the Rishonim point out that that's the definition that Rabbi Akiva gives. It's not that a beautiful woman is adorned in the physical appearance, but rather a isha that's na'a b'maseh, like Rabbi Akiva defines later on. That's someone who is neshiti tova, has lost all goodness. Others interpret it in its literal sense, that a woman who's beautiful, who draws the attention of her husband, that is also something that is a tova, some greatness, something good. So whether you take it literally or not, but it seems that this Gemara is a derivative of what happened before in the Gemara. Okay, we'll stop over here, and we'll continue tomorrow.